This is the Inside Slant Football Podcast, brought to you by Jayhawk Slant. We go behind the scenes to bring you the inside scoop from Les Miles and his staff, the KU players, and recruits. Here are your hosts of the Football Podcast, Randy Withers and John Kirby.
This is Randy Withers, and the Kansas Jayhawks are 1-0. Hit that applause button. Hit it twice. We are here to celebrate and to bring you another edition of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. This is another special football-only edition, a game day setup, if you will. We have some great guests lined up, including Joe Cashin, who covers the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers football program and also works in the South Carolina National Guard. He's obviously been very busy dealing with the terrible tragedy that is Hurricane Dorian. We're also going to hear from Kansas quarterback Carter Stanley as he talks about working on the sidelines in the waning moments of the game over Indiana, win over Indiana State with head coach Les Miles, and what that experience was like pulling off that big win for the Jayhawks in the first game for his new head coach. And then we'll take a little time to move into recruiting and hear from 2021 Kansas quarterback commit from Indiana, Mr. Ben Easters. And now it's time to welcome in my man, John Kirby, the myth, the legend, the most knowledgeable and in-depth Kansas football reporter there really is out there right now. Kirby, have you recovered from your post-game celebration after last week's season-opening victory for the Jayhawks?
I'm finally getting back into the swing of things. It took me, three or four days, but yes, I have recovered and I'm back.
Okay, let's jump right into this, Kirby. The Jayhawks are 1-0. Things got a little tight before they pulled it off there at the end. Let's look back before we move forward. Talk about the first win of the Les Miles era. What did you see last week that really stood out to you?
Well, Randy, the first thing I really think of, which is against the grain from what everybody else is talking about. Everybody else wants to talk about some of the deficiencies they saw on offense at times. I look at the defense, and the defense, I thought, really played well, especially for three quarters. And when you look at the points that Indiana scored, one of the touchdowns came off the Carter Stanley fumble in the end zone. So when you look back at the game, going into the fourth quarter, Indiana State only had 3 points. And again, I get it. This isn't Oklahoma that they played. But Indiana State is a solid FCS football team. They start 5 fifth-year seniors. They bring back 10 starters from a team that averaged 32 points a year ago. They've got a quarterback that transferred in from Iowa. I mean, this was a well-coached team. This was a tough team, a team with the experience. They were coming off a 5-game win streak. These guys believed in themselves. So, I mean, this is a defense from Kansas we didn't know much about. There were questions on the front seven going in. And I really thought they played pretty well. Then it got tight in the fourth quarter there. And one of the key points in the game, and I put this on the message board. Jayhawks had the ball. They were somewhere around the 20, 22 maybe it was. And they turned it over. They were up 16-3. And, that's just the difference. And hey, listen, that's why Les Miles is at Kansas, and he's trying to change those things. But up 16-3, driving in the opponent's territory, if they find a way to put the ball in the end zone right there and make that thing 23-3, that's probably game over. Because Indiana State was in the locker room at halftime. I heard Coach Mallory from Indiana State. I heard their players talking about it. They were hanging their heads a little bit, being held to 3 points at halftime. And if Kansas could have found a way to really push that lead to a whole nother level, I think the game could have got away from Indiana State. But, there were a lot of good things. There were some bad things. Indiana State loaded the box there defensively. Really forced Kansas, you shut down the run game there for a while. And, I think you look back at it and say Indiana State's front seven you know, it's probably one of the weaker front sevens the Jayhawks will see. And I sat down and talked with Carter Stanley about this, and he acknowledged it, that when he's got Daylon Charlotte and, you know, Andrew Parchment, guys he's got on the outside, and he's got one-on-one coverage, you know, he's going to know now to maybe give them a chance, you know, get out of the play call that they're in. So there were some good things and then some things they need to work on, but the bottom line is they got out of there with a win. And, hey, what fun is it to blow somebody out, right? Why not make it a close game and keep everybody on the edge of their seat?
You know, it's always good for TV ratings. People don't turn to other games. They keep their attention right there on the action in front of them. And, you know, you talk about just things that stood out. I was so impressed with the tackling from the Kansas defensive players. So many solid open field tackles. You saw guys hitting. They were aggressive. They were wrapping up, and they were getting guys on the ground better than I can really remember at any point over maybe the last 5, 6, 7 years. I was extremely impressed with the way the defense played. I thought they were very aggressive. Darius Moran obviously was just an absolute load. They were fun to watch, and obviously seeing Hassan defense really started off with the pick six and take that thing all the way back to the house. That was maybe the first moment where I set up and said, okay, maybe we're looking at something different here. And that I felt like the defense played really, really solid throughout the game. They had some moments where they really started to flash a little bit. I'm excited to see what we're going to see from them in week two. Now, Kirby, you had a chance to visit one-on-one with Carter Stanley about his experience in his first opportunity to lead a game-winning drive under new head coach Les Miles. Let's hear what he had to say.
You started connecting on some passes, and it looked like there was some one-on-one coverages. Did you guys notice they were starting to load the box and you were getting some better opportunities one-on-one?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we kind of noticed that pretty quickly. You know, I wish I could have done some things for us to attack that more. But, you know, I think we had a good game plan for the most part. And, you know, that wasn't necessarily part of the game plan going into it. But I think moving forward with the talent that we have at receiver, I think we might start to attack one of those or more of those one-on-one matchups.
This is the first time you've had a game with Coach Miles as your head coach in a tight game in the fourth quarter. What did you just notice from the way he acted and his demeanor and everything?
Yeah, he was really calm the whole time, and you know, he kind of ran us through the situation of what we needed to accomplish, and no, he was just very calm. The rest of the coaches were very relaxed, and you know, that helps us out a lot. Just, you know, I've been in situations where it's high stress on the sideline and, you know, a sense of panic, but those coaches seem very calm and, you know, like they've been there before for sure. And that helped us out a lot.
What's it do for you as a player when you're in a tight game like that with 6, 7 minutes to go and he's over there just calm as can be?
Yeah, I mean, that means a lot to us, just because obviously his credentials has passed, and just seeing that he's that calm in that situation, you know, we know that all we got to do is execute just one play at a time, and, you know, there's no need to panic, no need to, you know, be stressed about it, and just go out there and do what we do.
That was Carter Stanley, and that's a good sign, because you could tell that he had confidence being in that situation for the first time with Les Miles.
Yeah, Randy, and you also get the feel. I always go back, and I always refer to Les Miles as the old ball coach, and I don't say that because he's old. I say that because he's been around the game, and he's coached guys. He's lined up across the way from Nick Saban. He's been on those big time ESPN Saturday night games that everybody was tuning into, where they were going nuts in Baton Rouge. And I mean, he's played in a lot of big games. You know, he's got a national championship ring. Along with that comes some experience, okay? And he's won a lot of games. He's been in a lot of close games. He's lost some games. But his demeanor and the way that he can bring some of that to the team, I think rubbed off on Stanley. I really do. And Carter Stanley would talk to me about, as you heard there, how calm Miles was, how collected he was, and also not pulling him out of the game. Carter Stanley went wire to wire, took the first snap and the last snap. So, you know, that helps a kid's confidence. But again, I think that goes back to a guy like Les Miles, who's been through those trenches and been through the big games.
I agree. I absolutely agree. Now, before we get into talk about Coastal Carolina, let's bring Joe Cashin on, who's been a busy man with Hurricane Dorian and is also the play-by-play man for the Chanticleers. He joins John in the studio to talk about the game.
We are joined by Joe Cashin, who is the voice of Coastal Carolina, and it is the beginnings of a wild week down there. Before I get into the football part, I was talking with Joe off the air. I mean, Joe, you just got to tell us about what you do in your other job.
Well, John, first, thanks for having me on. It's a great opportunity to talk to you and Jayhawk fans out there. Other job is actually the one that pays more of my bills than the one where I'm on the air with Coastal. I'm in the South Carolina National Guard. I'm a public affairs specialist. And so whenever these things, storms, whatever, come down the pike, we pretty much jump into action because we have soldiers and airmen activated across the state to go do things to help the citizens try to stay safe, help the local civilian authorities do their job. We are in a supporting role, and we're out there, you know, just publicizing that and making sure that people know that, hey, you know, if there's any important messaging that needs to come out about, you know, where you can get bottled water or where sandbags are or where shelters are, you know, all the stuff that goes into, you know, trying to help the public and keeping them safe in a time like this, a time of uncertainty. That's kind of what I do. And every year, it seems like, every year around August, late August, early September, sometimes into October, one of these things is rolling our way, and that's when we swing into action. So I have to balance that and then try to call football games at the same time.
Well, sounds like what you do is a little bit higher up on the totem pole sometimes than calling the football games. Although I know we all think the football games are important in our business, but so hey, Joe, let me ask you this: you and I talked for a second. You said this happened last year, and now you know you're going through it this year. How does that affect everything? And you know, talk about what happens to a football team in a situation like this.
So last year, right after our home opener, the second game of the season, we had Hurricane Florence. It was bearing down on the coast. And so we played a Saturday night game in early September, and then the decision was made to clear campus and get everybody out of there. And so our football team actually went to North Carolina to play what was supposed to be our third game. It was supposed to be a home game against Campbell University. Well, we went up and played them on a Wednesday afternoon just to get the game in. Now imagine that. We had like 2 days of rest and to go up there and try to figure that one out, and we won big. We played well, but then after that we left Buies Creek, North Carolina, where Campbell is located. We went to Florida to get out of the way of Florence and stayed there for a number of days, and then, you know, after we found some places to practice and found hotels to house the kids and feed them for, you know, several days, it was a flight out to Louisiana to play the Raging Cajuns. And then it was back to Myrtle Beach, but we couldn't go back into campus because campus was still closed because of all the flooding that had come from Florence. And, you know, then it was the next game was out to Troy. So, you know, we're going all over the place. And this went on for almost a month. It went on for about 3.5 weeks all total. And I think, you know, our team came out of that 3-2, but I think at the end of the year, that's when I think the fatigue of what all had happened had kind of set in. I think it set in on Joe Moglia, our coach, and I think it set in on the kids. I think they were just, you know, that's a mental grind, John. I mean, these kids like to be in a routine. They want to be, you know, in their familiar surroundings, in their class, you know, classroom situations, their classwork, their academics. But when, you know, when you're away like that for that amount of time, eventually that's going to take a toll. And I think it did almost last year towards the end of the year. It was tough. And, you know, this week, here we go again. You know, we relocated to another part of the state to see what Dorian is going to do.
Wow. That's I mean, you know, I sit here and think I've covered Kansas football for 20 years. And, you know, we've never even heard anything, you know, something near that. Hey, let's go back a week ago, last game. You know, Coastal Carolina started off, lost to Eastern Michigan, held the lead at halftime. What was your takeaway from watching them in week one?
We had some good things happen. We played hard, which was something that we didn't really do a whole lot of towards the end of the year last year. You know, so you take victories where you can get them. I thought our kids hung in there, even though we you know, like you said, we got off to a good start in the game. We were up 10-0. We took the opening kickoff and went and scored. And we got a stop, and we got a nice punt return and kicked a field goal, and it's 10-0, and we led 13-7 at the break. And then Eastern Michigan kind of came out in the third quarter and hit us with some haymakers. They scored 16 in a row, and so we go from 13-7 up to 23-13 down. And those are the kinds of situations last year where, you know, at times our kids would, you know, and I hate to say it, but Jamie has said this, Jamie Chadwell, our kids kind of threw in the towel on some of those situations, but we didn't do that. Hung in there, you know, scored to cut it to three. I'm not blaming officials because these kinds of things happen. We didn't have some things go our way, I'll put it to you that way. But we were able to cut it to, you know, back to seven, recover an onside kick, but just didn't quite have enough time in the end. So, you know, give credit to Eastern Michigan. They were a bowl team last year. They've got some good players. You know, I thought we had chances in the game, had too many turnovers, couldn't run the ball, but, you know, still had a chance. So I felt, you know, you don't want to lose the opening game. You don't want to lose a game that you feel like you could win, but there were certainly some positives I think we took out of it.
You know, I've gone back and watched a little bit of the offense, and, boy, it seems like they do a lot of things. I've seen some option. I've seen some passing. I've seen all kinds of stuff. But what do they do out of that spread? How would you describe their offense, and who are some of the players to watch?
Players to watch would start with the quarterback, Fred Payton, our sophomore. He just had his fifth start, his eighth game the other day, so he's still learning on the fly. We didn't get a chance to redshirt him last year, and, you know, he had some interceptions the other day. One, you know, one was kind of a bad read. Another one was a D lineman made a heck of a play, and then, you know, two balls that went up for grabs. Hopefully he won't have to throw the ball 43 times. I mean, that's not a situation that I think Jamie Chadwell wants us to be in. And, yeah, we do run a lot of option. We'll run some, you know, jet sweep. Kion Tyler, he's a guy on the outside to look for. C.J. Marable, he's our running back. He's our featured guy. You know, he can run it well. He's got nice speed about him. We want to get him in the option game on the perimeter out there in space, and he's also good at catching the ball. He had a touchdown catch the other day. So those are some guys, some skill guys, I think, that if we're playing well, those guys have a lot to do with it. And then up front, Trey Carter offensively is our best offensive lineman, our right guard. He was our center last year, but due to some injuries and some guys, you know, being dinged up a little bit, we had to move him over to the guard spot. But, those guys are the ones, I think, that if we're playing well, the KU fans will notice.
You know, let's switch gears, move over to the other side of the ball. You know, talk about the defense. What did you see against Eastern Michigan? And, again, who are some of the players to watch there?
Players to watch would be Silas Kelly, junior linebacker. He led us in tackles the other day, and he had a big-time play at the end of the first half. Or an Eastern Michigan running back he's going for the pylon. He's going for the corner, and he's got it. But Silas gets over there to punch the ball out, and it hits the pylon, goes out of bounds, and we get it on a touchback. So instead of them getting seven, we went down and got three. Big sequence in the game. He had nine tackles the other day, as did his running mate in there with Teddy Gallagher, another linebacker for us. Teron Jackson, defensive end, he's a good one for us. And, you know, we did a good job in the run game. Other than, you know, that Eastern Michigan running back, Shaq Van, I think he went for just over 100. Their team rushed for 103. So that's not too bad. I mean, you can win games if you hold people to around 100 yards rushing. Their quarterback, Eastern Michigan's quarterback, went 20 of 22. I mean, it's like, is this guy ever going to miss? Are we going to pressure him? We've got to get pressure. I mean, that's the thing. We've got to figure out a way to get some pressure on Stanley or McVitie or whoever the quarterback got. You know, I guess Stanley got all the snaps the other day for KU, but we've got to get pressure on the passer to help out our back end. That's where we're going to be successful if we are on defense.
Well, we're to that point where everybody loves to know what the guy who covers the other team thinks. Give me your take on the matchup with these two teams. And, you know, if you had a prediction or some thoughts, what would they be?
I like the matchup. I mean, yeah, we're going against a Big 12 Power 5, and probably personnel-wise, KU, you know, has the advantage there. But, I mean, I haven't had a chance to really look at any film of the Indiana State game, but I'm just – looking at raw numbers, I'm thinking, you know, if we can figure out how to run the ball, I think we can be there. You know, I think we've got a chance to do it. We can't turn the ball over four times like we did the other day and short-circuit ourselves. And we've got to be better, a little bit better in the field position, special teams kind of game, because we had one critical possession where we had a real short punt, and that set them up with a 38-yard field, and that hurt us. But You know, if we can avoid the turnover, if we can run the ball and control the clock, that's what Jamie wants to do. That ideally, when our offense is running well and we're doing things that we want to do, we're controlling the ball and controlling the clock and limiting what the other team does, you know, with their possessions offensively. So I think if we can avoid mistakes and run the ball, we'll be okay. But if KU gets out there, they've got looks like a stable of running backs to me, and they get one back too that didn't play the other day. So if we can slow them down a little bit, I think we have a real shot at this thing. I really do.
Well, Joe, listen, I really appreciate you joining us here, and you guys stay safe down there, and appreciate everything that you do.
John, thanks so much for having me on. I look forward to the trip to Lawrence and the game on Saturday.
That was a great breakdown of the Chanticleers from Joe, and I echo Kirby's comments. We hope everybody stays safe down there in the South. JK, after listening to Joe, I know you've watched the film on Coastal Carolina, and you've talked to a lot of people like you always do. What's your take on the matchup between the Chanticleers and the Jayhawks?
Well, I think it's almost like night and day compared to what they're going to see from Indiana State. You know, I just touched on Indiana State. They had seniors. They were well coached, guys in the right spots. They handle their assignments. And I'm not saying Coastal Carolina doesn't do that, but they're different. They're younger. They've got like 80, 90 kids on their 125 who are underclassmen. You know, still relatively somewhat of a young head coach taking over. And they're more athletic than Indiana State is. There's no doubt about that. Now, sometimes in football, we get confused between being more athletic and being a better team. And I don't know at times if they're a better team than Indiana State, because those kids at Indiana State know what they're supposed to do and know where they're supposed to be. But at the same time, I think Coastal Carolina's got some scariness to them, because they do have some guys who can flash potential. You know, I was looking at their big tight end. I mean, golly, he looks like a guy that could play in the NFL. Their running back, he catches the ball out of the backfield, does a lot of things. The quarterback is athletic. They line up in this offense. They call it the spread option. And in the past, it was a little bit more option than they're running now. Now, you know, they threw the ball a lot last week, and the kid threw four picks at quarterback. So I think Coastal Carolina has a ceiling to where they could be scarier than Indiana State, and they also have a floor to where they may not be. You know, you may not worry about them as much as you did Indiana State. It's going to come down to this, Randy. I really think it's the O-line and D-line, and I think that plays into favor for the Jayhawks. After watching Coastal Carolina on film, I just don't know if they don't have as good of an offensive line as I think Indiana State does, and they got some athletes in their front seven. But KU's got a game under their belt now. They've had a chance to go back and clean up some of the offensive line mistakes. They're going to be able to get Carter Stanley into some check spots where he can move the ball to some receivers and check off at the line of scrimmage, and you get Puka Williams back. So I think that this game is interesting, because Coastal's got the athletes to hang with Kansas, but I'm just start as we get closer to this game, and as we're starting to fire up this podcast, I'm starting to feel a little bit better about this game than I was a couple days ago.
One of the hot topics on our message board has been the betting line in Las Vegas. It started at 10, it's dipped to 7.5, and it's now down to just 7 as we start this thing up. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I followed it. You know, I saw when it was at 8.5, and then at 8. And 7.5. And at all three of those stages, it was about 77% of the money was coming in on Coastal Carolina. So obviously, the gamblers out in Vegas like Coastal getting the points. You know, they're not betting that KU's going to lose the game. They're just betting that Coastal's going to cover that line. Then I saw it went to 7 just before we started the podcast here, and I saw 62% of the money at 7 is back on Kansas. So that kind of tells you right there that, you know, maybe some of those guys are waiting for it to drop before they get back in on the Jayhawks.
Uh-huh. Now we know what the folks in Vegas have had to say. Kirby, what do you think on this one? What's your prediction?
Well, Randy, I just think that Kansas had a week. It's a brand new staff. They've had a week and a game now to fix some of the things they saw. I like the way the defense played last week. I think they're going to get some things fixed with the offensive line. You get Puka Williams back. Carter Stanley's now had a chance to see what the situation is. He's got some confidence that they stuck with him in the lineup last week. And I like Kansas here. I'm going to say Jayhawks 34, Coastal Carolina 20. And now you don't get off the hook because now you have to tell us what you think.
You know, you went a little higher scoring than I did with this one. I see this one kind of being a little bit of a grinded out affair, really, like last week was. I see Kansas taking this one 24-17. I think the defense is going to force a couple turnovers here that give the KU offense an opportunity to put this one away, obviously late in the game. I think Puka has a coming out party. Not that he needs to have another one, but I think this is going to be him announcing himself again that he was no freshman year wonder, that there's not going to be a sophomore slump. He's going to show everybody that he's back and that he's ready. I think, like I say, I think the defense is going to be again very good. I think there could be a pair of turnovers in this one, and I think it'll be a little bit closer. I don't think it's going to get as high a scoring as you do, but I do expect to see the Jayhawks get ready for Boston College at 2-0. Let's go ahead and shift our focus a little bit, because last week there were some recruiting visitors in town for the Indiana State game, with Jalen Richardson, Trevor Cardell, Luke Grimm, and Garrett Jones all made the trip in to Lawrence to check out the game in Memorial Stadium. Kirby, people keep asking, and everybody's curious, how many spots can be left in the class for 2020? I mean, are there any spots left at this point? Because just before, you know, Friday night, just before I got ready to go in the studio on high school football last week, KU picked up another commitment.
Yeah, Randy, I've said this, and I know it's a topic on our boards, and people ask me about it all the time. Number one, we don't really know what's said to recruits, okay? We don't know. You've got a lot of things now. You've got blue shirting. You've got gray shirting. With the new NCAA rule that just came in that says a player has to be on campus 1 year now, and then he can be awarded a scholarship, okay? That used to be two. So it was hard to get a kid who's a good football player to go to your campus and spend 2 years there before he went on scholarship. Well, now the new rule says 1 year and you go on scholarship. So, you know, you don't know. There's a lot of different options out there right now. You don't know who's going to decommit. You don't know who's possibly, you know, on the borderline academically. So I tell people this all the time. Just kind of sit back. Let the Kansas staff handle this. These guys know what they do, what they're doing. They've got a board on the inside. They've got everybody's academics. They've got the numbers lined up. They know what they're doing. And I also think they're just being prepared. They're not going to get caught with their pants down. They're going to make sure and protect the program. And when that time comes, they'll deal with everything. And, you know, I got to say, it was pretty impressive talking to all the recruits who were there. A lot of guys commented about how good a time they had. You know, some of these kids have been committed to Kansas now for at least, you know, 3 or 4 months. So they've gotten a chance to know each other. They've gotten a chance to hang out with each other, talk on social media. And they're kind of building a bond among the recruiting class with everybody hanging together. So they were very positive about the crowd. They hung out with the team in the locker room, got a chance to talk to the coaches. So overall for week one, you know, I don't know if you're going to see a lot of official visitors during the season. And, you know, I don't know how many kids are going to be on campus in this current class just because there aren't many spots. But everything after week one was very positive.
Looking ahead to that 2021 class now, the Jayhawks already have their quarterback lined up in Ben Easters from Indiana. He was somebody the staff really targeted, and you and I had a chance to watch him at the Les Miles Elite Camp back in July. You had a chance to talk with Ben about his decision to choose Kansas. Let's listen to Kirby's interview with the Indiana quarterback commit.
Everyone, we are welcomed by Ben Easters, quarterback from Brownsburg, Indiana, who is one of the most recent commitments added to the Kansas commitment list, a 2021 quarterback. Ben, how you doing?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Hey, break it down for us. Tell us how week one was for you guys.
It was really good. We won 29-24. Our offense is really explosive throughout the game, and we're looking to just keep building on it the whole season.
How'd you play?
Good. I went 8 for 13. 150 yards and three touchdowns.
So hey, that's not a bad
for me personally.
Not a bad week. Something to build on, right?
That's right.
All right, let's go back a few weeks ago. You gave the Jayhawks a commitment. I know I watched you at the Les Miles Elite Camp. Just take me back to that camp and talk about the weekend being there around the coaches. I know your parents were there with you. What just stood out to you?
The main thing that stood out to me was how much of like a family environment it is. You know, as soon as I walked on the campus, you know, as soon as I walked in the facilities, I felt, me and my family felt like we were part of the Jayhawk family. You know, they welcomed us and gave us a ton of attention and treated us like we were one of their own before. And they had all just met me, you know, so that really stood out to me. And that was a huge deciding factor, was going somewhere where me and my family felt like we were a part of theirs.
You know, you got something that was unique that a lot of guys don't get to do. You got to go to camp and work with the coaches. Just describe that, you know, that 2 or 3 hours, however long that camp was, and having a chance to work close with them.
That was incredible. You know, that also was a huge deciding factor, was the fact that I got to go to camp, because, you know, going through drills, going through 7-on-7 and 1-on-1s, you get to get coached up by, you know, Coach K, Coach Dierman, Coach Heck, Coach Miles, all guys that are going to coach you in the camp the way they would coach their own players, you know, and that gave me some insight as to how they would coach their own players. So I was impressed by the way they coached me at that camp.
You know, talk about the Kansas staff. I know at one point when I talked to you earlier, you said Hachlinski was like one of the first college coaches that followed you on Twitter. You know, what did the staff do to sell you on being a Jayhawk?
Kind of going back to what I said before, they treated me like family. They made me feel like I want to play for them. You know, they didn't have to say it, like just being around them, talking to them, being able to relate to them. Like Coach Heck, the first few times that we talked weren't even about football, really. I was going on a vacation with my family to California, and he was giving me good places to eat in California and just asking how I was and being able to relate to the coaches and have just normal conversations, not just talking about football all the time, but talking about anything, you know, being able to, when you're able to talk about anything with the coach, you're able to put a lot of trust in them. And I feel like with that staff, I can put all my trust in them to make me a better player and a better person.
How nice has it been for you going into your junior season, starting quarterback, to make a decision and know where your home's going to be and be able to focus on that as your junior season gets underway and not have to worry about recruiting?
It's awesome. It's a huge burden lifted off my shoulders, you know. I don't have to try and impress college coaches anymore. I don't have to put together a 4-game highlight, a 2-game highlight. I don't have to post highlights every week, you know. I know where I'm going. I know the coaches love me where I'm going. You know, I've proved what I have to prove to make it there to them. So it's an awesome feeling being able to go in and focus 100% on playing and winning the state championship with my team.
Great stuff. Everyone, that's Ben Easter's Kansas quarterback commitment. And Ben, good luck for the rest of the season. I'm sure we'll talk to you long before it's all over.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
That was KU verbal commit Ben Easter's joining us, and he's a sharp young guy, and we watched him at camp. And I personally, John, I like the way the ball comes out. I think he's got a quick trigger with it. He's got a good release. I think they've got a good quarterback prospect here.
Yeah, you know, Hachlinski went after him. There were some ties with Hachlinski coming from Indiana State, that he knew some people there in the area, knew the coach at the high school, and Kansas targeted him early, and I thought he looked really good at the elite camp, and that's huge to get your quarterback. And just talking to the kid, you know, people always say, well, if a guy commits early, do you fear that he's going to decommit or change his mind? And, you know, it's always a possibility. Hey, it's recruiting. You know, it's game on. There's never, nothing's ever done till they sign. But, you know, Ben Easters is a solid kid. Just when you listen to him, you know, he sounds very sold on Kansas. So it's a nice thing as a staff to have your 2021 guy already locked up a quarterback, because it's one of the hardest positions to recruit.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You know, the way quarterback recruiting has become so sped up and guys are committing so much earlier, I almost feel like you don't have to worry as much because of that, because so many guys ahead of him have already committed. You don't expect to see him jump ship for a better opportunity because there aren't spots out there. I think it's really sped up the timetable, and that's part of the reason you see so many quarterbacks, you know, they sign during the early window. A lot of them end up on campus early. It's for the Jayhawks to be able to jump in that line, take advantage of that. That new wave of early quarterback recruiting and have their guy a full year early. That's tremendous. That is absolutely huge for this staff. And just another example of the kind of success they're having on the recruiting trail. That is going to do it for this edition of the Inside Slant Football Podcast from JayhawkSlant.com as we gear up for Coastal Carolina. Guys, get ready for another great one. Hopefully we come out of this one 2-0, and we are getting ready for a big trip to Boston. We hope to see everybody at Memorial Stadium coming up this weekend for the game against the Chanticleers. This is Randy Withers for John Kirby and Jayhawk Slant signing off. We'll talk to you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.